Continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program provides free income tax preparation assistance and e-filing for low to moderate income households. Volunteers are needed. Call 262-658-4104.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist with the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside, and Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Welcome to Community Matters. I'm today's host, Jane Herring. Many coming to our country, and Kenosha in particular, are seeking the American dream, a safe environment, a home, good schools, employment. In 2019, naturalizations, or successful completion of the citizenship process, numbered 843,599 nationwide, which was 11% more than 2018. This success rate was up, despite numbers of those initiating the applications being down. In 2020, the numbers of naturalizations dropped to just over 625,000, another result of a COVID world. So what does it take to become a U.S. citizen, and where would one get assistance to do so? How does one ensure they will be among the successful in the citizenship process? We'll answer some of those questions today with this interview with the Kenosha Literacy Council. Our guests are Cassie Christensen, who is the program director of the Literacy Council, and Paula Tui, who you might remember as the former director of the Kenosha Public Museums and volunteer civics instructor and English tutor for the Kenosha Literacy Council. With you, Cassie, I'm hoping you can give us an idea about the whole process of becoming a U.S. citizen. If you can begin with that, please.
Sure. So the process begins with a student or a person who sends in an application. But in order to become eligible to send in that application, there are a couple of things. The person needs to be 18 years old. So they have to be an adult before they can apply to be a citizen. And they also have to have lived here with residency for 5 years or for 3 years, but having been married to an American citizen. So those are the two main criteria for being able to apply for citizenship. So once they apply for that citizenship, they'll send in a check with their application. The fee for that is a total of $725. And that covers their application fee and also what they refer to as their biometrics fee, which is biometrics is where they collect the applicant's fingerprints. So once the application goes through, the applicant will be contacted and set up an appointment for collecting those fingerprints or their biometrics appointment. And then about a few weeks after that, they'll be contacted again to go through the actual citizenship test. So there are three parts to their test. The first part is an interview. So the immigration officer will be asking them some questions about their application. And then they'll also be doing a civics test. So they have to pass the civics test and prove that they know about the U.S. history and also current politics. And finally, they wrap up the application process with an English test to show that they have reading and writing skills in English. So that would all be completed during that appointment with the immigration officer. And if they are approved, they get to celebrate with an oath ceremony.
Which I bet is pretty darn exciting.
Yeah, for sure. That's what they look forward to, right? That's a big celebration for them.
Definitely. And this is not really an easy or inexpensive process. So, you know, obviously with this interview today, we're going to be picking some of those parts apart. You mentioned the interview. Is it basically just going over what had been stated in the application, or is it getting greater detail? Are they trying to figure out their passion behind becoming a citizen?
So it's actually a really lengthy application. It's about 23 pages long, so can't imagine sitting down and filling out 23 pages about yourself. but basically, there are questions there in the application that are about the person's stay in the United States and, what their background is in the United States, and then also questions, if there's any criminal history or travel history or anything like that. So the person doing the interview, the immigration officer, is basically picking through that application and just clarifying any details, and also making sure that it's all honest and true, what is on the application. So make it kind of like going to the doctor and they ask you the same question three times. They just want to make sure that the information is accurate.
That was a very good analogy right there. We're going to pick parts of this apart again, but I'd like to bring Paula Tui into the discussion as a tutor. And between the two of you, $700 and some, 23-page application, lots of learning, and all of that for an oath ceremony. I'm sure it means a lot more to them than just having the ceremony. So what are some of the reasons people are seeking citizenship in the United States based on your interactions with the students?
Yeah, so there are definitely a lot of benefits to being an American citizen. One of the top ones that I think that everyone is aware of and a lot of the students say they're interested in or is kind of their main reason is they want to participate in our elections. They want to be a part of the community in that way. And so voting is probably the number one reason that we hear. A lot of things that relate to family as well, right? So being a citizen, they would be able to apply for their children to be citizens as well. And then being able to get a US passport. So it makes life a lot easier if you're traveling back and forth from your home country in the United States that you can travel a lot easier with a US passport. And then some of the other things that
from what I've seen too is that people love living here. They want to stay. And so they want to be a part of the school system and the government and traveling on the US passport. And so I think that without a doubt, that's one of the things that is the same for all of the people I've met.
You know what I find interesting with both of you saying elections and being part of the governmental process, so many people who have grown up in the United States take it so for granted, they could care less. You have to beg them to go out and vote. I find that curious. Why are they feeling so strongly about it? What do you hear? Is it because
I think people want to be part of. I think it's the American dream and they're pursuing it. And part of it is being able to vote and being able to have the US passport and documents and it's the whole package.
Yeah, and I think also just being involved in the government and in your community. I think the people who are coming from other countries really respect that American idea of that every voice counts and their vote is going to matter in their community. And so they want to be a part of that process. So a lot of our learners are coming from so many different countries. We don't necessarily know the political background in their countries, but if particularly they're coming from a country that is struggling with or having challenges in politics, then they feel very strongly and want to be a part of that American idea. So
totally makes sense. Paula, as an instructor of the citizenship classes, tell me a little bit about, because they have to take the civics test, what are some of the things that you're teaching them and following what sort of curriculum?
Well, the thing is that there is many resources available for people that are looking for citizenship. There's self-learning and discs and audio things that you can take. But it is very, the Literacy Council offers the citizenship class, and that really is good because not only do you sit down with other people with the same goal as you, but you are actually then practicing your English. And it's when they practice it with me, they are practicing because I don't speak another language. So we have to make do with English. And but the curriculum is very widespread. It's sort of like all your history classes, all the civics classes you've had through elementary school, and geography, because you have to know all of that as well as spelling and writing. So and that's just 8 weeks, 2 hours a class. So it many students will take the class twice, some even maybe again three times, because the Literacy Council offers them very often and with a very nominal amount of fee. And it really is good. I think another main part of the class is to build people's confidence, especially to ask a question. Like many times people are very reluctant to talk to government officials, depending on where they might be from. But we try to encourage people to say, if you don't understand, or if you can ask, please repeat the question, or, you know, can you say that again, or something like that. And those simple things can mean a lot, can mean success or failure in an interview, really.
Oh, I can imagine that that has got to be, and I think it's very easy to forget, tested in something that has taken us years of schooling to learn, those of grew up here, but you're learning it in a language that is not yours to begin with. So it's English as a second language. And you might be coming from, as you mentioned, Paula, a country where there's a very, either a large distrust or fear of their government. So it's not exactly the kind of situation you find yourself in. And then now you've got this 23-page application that some immigration officer is going to be questioning you about. I imagine confidence is really key to survival.
Well, I think whenever you're speaking a different language, or I mean, even if you're just trying to do technical things or something like that, I mean, practice really helps. And just being having a in the classes, we do drills and repetition and things like that. So it really does help bolster that confidence a little bit.
I can imagine. Cassie, tell me now, we're hearing a little bit from Paula about the in-class experience, but tell me, how often do you offer this? What's the what was the plan of the Kenosha Literacy Council to do this sort of a support class?
So we actually offer this class four times a year. So we like to offer the class at multiple different days and times. So maybe during the spring, we'll offer it on a Saturday, and then in the summer on a weeknight, so that we can reach as many people as possible throughout the year. The class is 8 weeks long, and we cover a lot of information in that 8 weeks. So as Paula mentioned, they're learning all the information for that civics test that we have spent you know, many years learning from when we were children to adults. So they're getting a lot in within that 8 weeks covers the civics test and also the application. So the instructor for the class will teach that 23-page application so that the student can fill it out on their own and send it in. And then they also do some practice testing. So they'll do a practice interview with the teacher in the class.
Wow, that sounds so valuable. You mentioned that with the application. Again, if, for those of us who haven't seen the application, what's you said something about their experience in the United States. So how long they're here, why they came. I mean, what sort of things do they in that?
Mm-hmm. So it covers, right, personal information. So going through information about the applicant, but also their family, so their parents. So they're going to be giving information about their family. It talks about if there's any disability, is there anything that the applicant has? And then information about their residency, so when they came here to the United States, and then also if they've taken any trips. So even if they've just gone on a vacation for 2 weeks out of the United States, they have to know the first day of that vacation and the day that they return from that vacation.
Wow.
Yeah, and I would have to use all my Facebook pictures in order to figure that out, I think. and then about their ethnicity, right? So just kind of some basic information there, and their job. So a lot of that kind of personal information.
I think as an applicant, and I don't know what sort of guidance you're able to share with them based on what you hear from the immigration officials, but as an applicant, I'd be worried about my answers and really, is this something they want to hear? Or is this going to count against me? And do they want to hear that I go back 5 times a year? Or does that mean I'm not going to be accepted? I mean, what kind of...
Well, the main thing you have to say is you have to tell the truth. you cannot ignore a question. You have to tell the truth because otherwise, and if there's an issue, then you deal with it. But if you don't put the correct and the proper things down, then your application could just be voided completely. So,
yeah, and that's exactly, I just want to reiterate what Paula said, that's what the immigration officer is looking for, is 100% the truth on the application. So they go back 5 years, that within that 5 years, right? That's the history that they want. So even if somebody's been living here for 10 years, anything that happened outside of that 5-year application period, they don't need to include on the application.
Hmm. It sounds like that kind of guidance. I mean, nobody likes forms. I can't see a human being on the planet who loves to fill out forms. I imagine that alone would be a huge help, as well as the tutoring sessions on civics and then practice interviews would be just awesome. What do you find? I think a lot of us would have some fear about going back and taking perhaps a civics class about something we learned in fifth grade and instantly forgot. Perhaps you, Paula, when you're teaching this, did you think to yourself, oh, I'd forgotten all about that? What were some of the things that caught your attention?
Well, really, it's pretty basic. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, why are there 13 stripes in the flag? And how many stars are there in the flag? I mean, so all those sorts of symbolic sort of things you need to know. And what is the largest state in the United States? And what is the smallest? What is one of the first colonies? You know, those are all things that they need to know. But of course, then there's all, I mean, the vocabulary is also an issue, because you're talking about colonies and you're talking about when you're talking about the executive branch and the legislative branch and the judicial branch, you know, you also have to know what those things mean. So, you know, it is a lot of concepts, and we just go through them one at a time and try to weave them together in some sort of continuity. And of course, when you think of it, there are a lot of people that you need to know about. There's, you know, well, all the students know George Washington, the father of our country. So that's one that's always a gimme. But then you have, you know, Abraham Lincoln, you have John Adams, you have Dwight D. Eisenhower, and then you have the Roosevelts. So, I mean, when you start to mention all of that, they not only have to know the name, they have to put it in the right century, and what did they do? So, again, the you try to make connect the names with an event or something that they did that. And then it really helps having a class, because the students do talk and they do ask questions, and sometimes you see a light bulb, you know, that it, you make a connection that means something. So, I mean, I think that really energizes the class too.
Now, Polly, you're a volunteer doing this, correct?
Yes.
And Cassie, can you tell me a little bit about that aspect? I know you have a lot of volunteer tutors and instructors. One, how do you prepare your instructors? How many do you have for these different types? I know you have the English language learning as well as civics classes. Most people know about the Literacy Council, but maybe you can give us a quick overview as to how this fits into the bigger picture.
Sure. Yep. So we just a little bit of background about the Literacy Council. We do have over 200 volunteer tutors, and we serve over 500 students from 40 different countries. So our volunteers that work in the citizenship program would also be volunteers that who have also been literacy tutors. So. They have experience working with many many different types of students from different countries, and students at different literacy levels. So they have to kind of have that experience with us before they become a citizenship teacher. And then they, you know, if they express interest in becoming a citizenship teacher, we would have them sit in and observe with a class and an experienced citizenship teacher. And then we also have training through like conferences and things that our volunteers can attend to prepare to be a citizenship instructor. And then there's a book that we use, a specific book that really leads the instructor through the class. That resource is really beneficial to the instructor, but also the students, so they can study specifically the information needed to pass the test. And then we use the USCIS.gov website to get resources and things for our volunteers and students as well.
I was able to sit in one single Zoom class, Cassie, that you had for citizenship with a couple of the tutors. But I think you were teaching it at the time. And it was really interesting seeing, again, things we might take for granted presented in such a good way. You were following up on the different levels of government, executive level, legislative level, and what the city, county, U.S., And that can be very confusing to anybody, let alone someone who was not brought up in our political system. And I was really impressed with how the curriculum clarifies that and lays it out. Paula, do you ever get any, I know there's no bad question in the world, but one that maybe stops you cold and you think, oh, I never thought about that. I just always took that for granted.
Well, I can't think of one right offhand. The students usually are very eager to learn the content. I mean, they're very focused on being successful in mastering the information. And I often do different timelines and put, you know, like the Louisiana Purchase, you know, the Declaration of Independence, World War II, and then they have to put it in the right order, or vocabulary words, or, the book has a lot of yes or no questions. They have fill in the blanks. They have, so you do those things too at the end. I think the most questions we get is when they're trying to fill out the application. We do just an initial draft, not the final one or anything. And many of those questions are ones that are pretty hard to answer. So we refer them to Cassie.
What might some of those be referring to?
Well, there's just all sorts of, especially the travel, or address, do I have to put all my addresses down, or a family? What about, do stepchildren have to be on here? All this sort of thing. So there's just any kind of issue that you can think of, it just could come up and be not quite fit into that blank. And so then trying to be very diligent about answering and doing it right, you have questions come up. So,
yeah, I can see where that would get pretty darn crazy. Cassie, I know we were talking about the major steps. There's the application, there's the civics test, and then there's the interview. How do you prepare them for the interview? What kind of questions? Are there some common questions that are included within the curriculum, or do you just pull some out of the hat based on what perhaps some of your graduates, let's say, of the program have told you that have been asked?
Yeah, so the students go through a mock interview, and during that interview, they will be asked, like you said, some just kind of pull them out of the hat questions that they can practice, going back into their application and answering the questions just kind of off the top of their head to make sure that they're able to give the answer in English that aligns with what they did put on their application, so that they know they're being honest and truthful about their application.
Thing is that with the civics, it's not like a written test. I mean, the civics test, they only ask 10 questions to the student, and they only need to get 6 correct. But they need to know, I think there's 100 or 120 questions. I mean, they need to know all of those answers, because you don't know which 10 they're going to pick.
Got it.
So,
yeah, so there's 100 questions that they need to study. And that's, like Paula mentioned before, a lot of vocabulary to learn in those 100 questions, on top of history and government structure that they aren't familiar with. So I always think it's interesting to see if people would be able to pass that now, having lived in the United States their entire life. So.
But that's, I can't help but think about it too. I know how government works. I understand how bills get passed and the different levels of government. But history, I have a general idea. But to remember specifics, yeah, I'd want to know what those 100 questions are and be able to study ahead of time, believe me. Just spelling bee that you folks have. You get a reading list. I would like one of those for the test.
Yeah, and that's what's really, really great about the class at the Literacy Council is that, you know, like Paula mentioned, there might be a question where you have to name, you know, 10 states. So we're going to make sure that they are able to name 10 states. I doubt that anybody living in the United States could name all 50 states right off the top of their head. So let's make sure they know at least 10 and they can get through that question.
And like you say, then it becomes a matter of confidence that, well, I know I can do at least 10. If they ask 11, well, we'll see.
That's right.
Let's go back to that $725 for the application fee. That's that can be a whole heck of a lot of money for anybody. And some of the folks who are coming to you are coming to you because they want to be able to speak English so that they can get higher paying employment. Is there any kind of service available that offers grants for covering that cost, or is that truly up to the student?
It's mostly up to the student, and I think that that's why when they come to us, like we said before, they're really invested in it. They only have two opportunities to pass the test, so if they do fail the first time, then they can reschedule another one, but if they don't pass that second time, then they'll have to repay the fee and apply again. So once they've invested $725 into it, they come to us and are really dedicated to passing the test. If somebody really is financially burdened and is not able to pay that, they can apply for a fee waiver through the government. But for the most part, students would be responsible for paying that $725.
Okay. About how many students do you typically see in a year? I know this year you've been doing everything via Zoom and doing a great job of that. But in a typical year, how many students in citizenship would the Kenosha Literacy Council work mm-hmm. with?
So we typically see about 40 students come in. We have about 10 students in each citizenship class. So.
And that seems like a nice number. Now, Paula, when you're teaching, are you more on a one-on-one small group or all 10 of those, let's say?
I've had all different levels. I mean, not one-on-one. We've always had several students and again, and many times there are different levels. Some of them are very proficient and know all the answers, and then others are struggling some, and you try to, and they help each other really, which is good. And again, by the repetition and rereading, it really does start to fall into place. I mean, you know, you learn about the geography, you learn about the history, and then about the government. You know, how many representatives are there in the House of Representatives? It's kind of fun to hear people, you know, trying to be the first one to answer.
Aw, cool. So you've got that small group, they're building confidence as they go on. They're learning this. You mentioned proficiency and comfort level with the material, but I also know that the Literacy Council works with different English language learning at different levels, where from no English all the way up to where they're about ready to go on to, let's say, Gateway Technical College. Class like this, do you have a mix of English proficiency?
I've usually had a mix, but I mean that's easier to deal with and when you're face to face. But it also is a good chance for students to really try out their ability, and then many if they're having trouble, not only will take the class again, but will sign up with the Literacy Council to do some extra work so that they can spell and read better.
Well, I was wondering.
Go
ahead, Cassie.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. So Paula, you read my mind. when we notice that a student is struggling with their English skills, we know that that's a huge part of passing the test. They're proving that they know English through that civics, that oral civics test, and then through the English reading and writing test. So right away, if we know that somebody is struggling with that, then we get them enrolled into our tutoring program as well, so we can master those English skills, and then be prepared to study for citizenship.
Like you say, that's critical. And I know while this interview is really about becoming a U.S. citizen and the process to get there and how you're supporting that, it does go beyond that to your other English language learning services. But I think people know you do that and the tutoring, et cetera. But one of the things I find interesting is that you also are working on getting the students kind of out into the community. You know, since we have Paula on board, you have an art club, doing things that I guess they learn some more about the specific topic or their field trip or whatever, but they also are learning English along the way. I'm babbling, but Cassie and Paula, if you could tell me really what the intent is and what sort of activities that you organize to support all of this.
Sure, yeah, maybe I can give a little bit of background, and then maybe Paula, if you have some examples that you can remember from leading any of the classes. So you're right on, Jane. We want our learners to be as connected to their community and our community as possible. They're living here and we want them to experience it just as much as anybody else living here. And, you know, that means that we're going to offer opportunities that give them practice and experience in just daily tasks such as shopping at the pharmacy or going to the library, opportunities to visit the hospital and know how to navigate the hospital system, visiting the bank, meeting a banker and talking about those things. But in addition to that, right, many of our learners have families and they're also looking for opportunities to have fun in the Kenosha community. So we have been offering art club, which Paula can probably talk a little bit about, and also one of our conversation classes called Adventure Class, where they're just finding different places to visit in the community. So they're learning how to be active in the community in many different ways with their daily tasks, with fun and entertainment, and then also through our citizenship program. So Paula, I don't know if you have.
Yeah, well, one of the things that like in the citizenship class that I usually use to kind of acquaint the students with fathers of our country and things is our money. Because of course, on the $1 bill, you have George Washington and I have a $2 bill, that's Thomas Jefferson. And of course the $10 bill is Alexander Hamilton. And who knew Alexander Hamilton until Hamilton was on TV? Now that's not such a hard sell, because that is one of the civics question is who authored the Federalist Papers, and Alexander Hamilton. But so trying to connect some of these facts to things they're familiar with, I think is one of the things that helps with the citizenship learning. And as far as introducing students, and families to what's available in Kenosha, such as you know, the art center, the museums, the galleries, and just walking around looking at the sculpture at the at the harbor at Harbor Park. I mean, many of these things are free and open to the public and to families. And so it's just a matter of making it comfortable and also maybe providing, I mean, when we were doing art club, we had a little outline of some sort, something for students to look for or pick out their favorite thing, piece of artwork, or you be the judge, and which one would you pick as, you know, the best. And that that gives students and citizenship a feeling of accomplishment and you feel at home, you know. So I mean, and they can share too with their children and with their family. So I think that's really important, and the Literacy Council does such a good job of doing that.
That makes really good sense, because what's the point of being a citizen if you don't get involved in your community? And you're really opening the doors to that. And as you mentioned, both of you have mentioned, it really gives great opportunity for people to practice their English skills while having some fun. So Cassie, do you ever allow on any of your field trips, do you allow them to speak their native language, or do they all have to speak English all the time?
So our number one rule at the Literacy Council is English. The reason is because it's the one language that we all share, and it's the one language that everyone's
got. Thank you so much, Cassie. Cassie Christensen is the program director for the Kenosha Literacy Council, scheduling English language learning classes, citizenship, teaching, and much more. And thank you, Paula Tui, volunteer tutor and citizenship instructor for the Literacy Council. I'm Jane Herring. Thank you for joining us today on Community Matters.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Support comes from Kenosha County ADRC, now offering regional medical trips. Kenosha County residents may make a reservation for rides to medical appointments in Walworth, Racine, and Milwaukee counties. $15 one way. Reservations are required one day in advance. Call 262-658-9093. From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Kenosha Lions Foundation has announced their grants award program in 2021 for Kenosha County service organizations. Only written requests will be accepted and must be received by March 15th. To enter, email KathyApellegrino@gmail.com.
Support for WGTD comes from the Carthage College Business and Professional Coalition, inviting you to a free virtual talk by the president and CEO of Fratert Health, Catherine Jacobson. It'll be held Tuesday, March 30th at noon. Mrs. Jacobson will discuss how the pandemic has affected the healthcare industry and how healthcare leaders are approaching the future. Learn more and register for the event at carthage.edu/businesscoalition.
I'm Steve Brown, inviting you to join us on Saturday morning, March the 27th at 11:15 for the WGTD Radio Theater's rebroadcast of The Catcher in the Spy, the true story about baseball player Mo Berg, who was an American spy during World War II. Support comes from the Kenosha law firm of Aaliyah, Dumay, and McTernan. The Radio Theater, Saturday morning, March the 27th at 11:15.
WGTD is an affiliate of Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR. A cultural asset and a community resource, WGTD is owned and operated by Gateway Technical College, with additional financial support from the Wisconsin Public Radio Association and local underwriters whose customers value public radio.
You're listening to WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, your gateway to public radio.